Good morning and welcome to a special Ask the Traffic Experts on WTOP Radio. From hot lanes, the new ICC, gridlock on 270 and I-66, distracted driving, metro, there's certainly no shortage of topics and traffic frustrations in our region. And joining us this morning to help you make sense of it all, WTOP veteran traffic reporter Bob Marburg, WTOP sprawl and crawl reporter Adam Tuss, and we have Dr. Gridlock from the Washington Post with us, Robert Thompson. You're an important part of this hour, and we want to hear from you. The number to speak with our traffic panel is 877-336-1035. The number again, 877-336-1035. We'll also take questions through Facebook, and you can also send in a tweet using the hashtag AskThe on WTOP. We want to make the point right up front, Bob Marburg, as we bring you in to begin this hour. We're not just talking about traffic tie-ups, which are often the first thing that people think about when they hear about traffic frustration in the area. This is the full transportation picture this morning.
Traffic really is kind of the symbol of the quality of life around the Washington region. Gridlock, in many ways, is actually the epitome of it. But what we're really talking about is people, all of our lives, and how getting from one place to another affects the course of the day, the quality of their life, your productivity. Therefore, of course, if we say traffic, we really mean transportation in all its forms. Buses, planes, trains, on foot, bicycles, by any means in which people get from where they live to where they need to be and hopefully somewhere close on time and then home again at the end of the day before daycare kicks into overtime.
What is the first thing that often, Bob, that people say to you when they run into you, whether it's at the grocery store or when you're talking to them on the phone in the traffic center? What frustrates them most?
Well, first, they usually call up and say, this is the worst traffic ever. And in some cases, that may literally be true.
It technically is true.
Well, technically it is if you're caught up in it, because for each person, the transportation experience is very, very personal. We look at it at a very global level, but the way that we report it is very widespread over an area more than 50 miles in radius. But by the same token, the way people experience it on a daily basis, it's very, very personal.
Whether we're in our cars or whether we're taking metro, the amount of time that we spend seems to be growing every year. Do we have any sense that people are dealing with this better, or have we just now have more resources to know what's going on?
I'll say that, you know, the dirty little secret about congestion is that in some respects it's good. You know, to have congestion means that people are going to jobs. It means that the economy is moving along. If you didn't have the level of congestion that we have right now, that could be a bad thing. So you see all these traffic studies come out and people talking about, you know, who has the worst congestion in the country. Well, D.C. has been ranked as having the worst congestion in the country, but it's for a reason, because there are a lot of jobs here. And oh, by the way, there are a lot of jobs that are going to be moving here. And by a lot of estimates, there are a lot of people that are still coming here. So when you look at the big picture, we're going to have traffic for a long time. It's how we manage it, how we deal with it. That's really the most important thing that I think we need to focus on.
Many of my readers will write in and say that, you know, we really should all live closer to where we work. And then other readers will come back and say, well, doctor, how many times do you want me to move in the course of my career? I, as Adam was just saying, I have the ability to change jobs. Do I have to move every time I change my job? I have to live in five or six different places during the course of my career.
Right. And you're talking about one person, two people who work in a household. One person might get a new job. So all of that goes into effect. You know, BRAC is probably the best explanation of what has happened there. You know, just because one family member got quote unquote BRAC'd and has to move somewhere doesn't necessarily mean the other person has to. So there's a whole host of factors that go into it. And it'll really be interesting, in my opinion, to see what happens with the whole BRAC movement over the next couple of months and years, because we are going to have new commuting patterns and they've already started in the region. So, you know, we'll see how that affects things.
You know, that is one of the major issues, Adam, because even if you don't change jobs in so many places, your workplace has changed. Let's build a work campus in Loudoun. Let's move to Frederick or Fredericksburg. It all may make economic sense, but from a personal standpoint, it can be terribly disruptive.
Telecommuting, Bob. Telecommuting is the way of the future, and I'm afraid it's going to put us all out of business.
Now, get traffic updates on Twitter at WTOP Traffic.
Folks are lining up this morning to speak to our panel of traffic experts. This is Ask the Traffic Expert on WTOP Radio. Our own WTOP traffic reporter Bob Marburg is with us. WTOP's Sprawl and Crawl reporter Adam Tuss is alongside, along with Dr. Gridlock from the Washington Post, Robert Thompson. The number to dial in is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Please be patient. Phone lines are all lit up. We'll take questions from Facebook as well. You can send an email if you have a question for us at WTOP.com. Twitter, use the hashtag WTOPAskThe. Gentlemen, we have an email question. Bob, I'd like to know this myself. Can you give us the background as to why 395 HOV lanes can't be reduced to HOV2 like they are in I-66? Why is it HOV3 on 395?
Well, I was out in Roslyn when Governor Allen actually dropped the HOV. I mean, literally, he was up in the bucket and took the sign down. But the whole idea of the HOV lanes is to maximize the number of people that you can move. It is not to maximize the number of automobiles or even vans that you can move.
Right.
And most of the surveys, and COG has commissioned a number of surveys, count the number of people, and unless you finesse the volume just right, then you will lose the ability to maximize the ability of moving individuals where they need to go. You know, with the hybrid cars, the idea was, for the right reason, go out and buy a hybrid car, theoretically improve the atmosphere. But the reality of it was the purchase of a hybrid car was actually the ticket to a free ride.
Right. And it started clogging the HOV lanes.
It has indeed. In fact, we can look ahead to the hot lanes and see how, if it's too successful with carpools, how it may not be a moneymaker in terms of actual, but we'll see how that plays out.
What do you expect, though, to happen once the hot lanes are in effect all along that corridor? Are you anticipating a greater relief, or are you anticipating it's going to be more gridlock?
I think the people who are not in the hot lanes and are not moving are going to look across that Jersey wall with a certain measure of resentment. We'll see how that all plays out. I trust the people who are building it. Fluor and Transurban have done a very serious market study and understand from a business standpoint how it's going to work out. But I don't know from a commuter standpoint how it's going to play out.
Well, here's the encouraging thing about the hot lanes on the Capitol Beltway on the Virginia side. Nothing is being taken away. In fact, lanes are being added. There's two new lanes that are going to be added between Springfield and just north of the Dulles Toll Road. So in effect, you're going to have what you had before plus two new lanes in each direction. Now, if you have three or more people, you can use those lanes for free if you want to pay to use those lanes. And they have said, the Fluor Transurban people have said, that they have to keep a minimum speed of 45 miles an hour. And of course, that's done by raising or lowering the toll. So there's an incentive there. We will see how it all plays out. The one positive thing, and I'm not making any predictions about it because, truthfully, we don't know until it opens. But the one positive thing I will say about the hot lanes is that something is being added. It's not being taken away.
And we'll know by this time next year, the hot lanes will be open for your next round of Christmas shopping in 2012. I think the hot lanes folks figure they're not going to add or subtract from the overall amount of congestion once the beltways in its new configuration. What they're telling you is that you will be able to get a more consistent ride, mm-hmm. that you will not use these new lanes every day. You will use them when you have to get to that daycare appointment to pick up your kids before the bills start running up, when you have to get to your 9 a.m. appointment at your office in Tyson's. Then you'll go into those lanes.
What is the timetable for listeners on when they can expect to see the hot lanes rolling on the Beltway?
I believe it's early next year.
It'll be around the end of next year for the lanes to be open. However, we will be able to see some improvements in the lanes even before that. In fact, this coming weekend, a new flyover ramp is going to open between eastbound I-66 and the inner loop of the Beltway, meaning that drivers won't have to use that left-hand exit, which is so problematic for them because it means that you get fast and slow-moving traffic combined together. It'll be, if you're going to Route 7, for example, if you want to come up quickly on that Route 7 exit from the Beltway, this new flyover ramp is for you, and that's this weekend.
Another interesting thing about, you know, the whole hot lane debate, the ICC. These roads that are opening in our area, when you talk to traffic and transportation people, this is the wave of the future everywhere. You know, toll roads really are what's going to drive the way that we get around in the future, specifically variable tolls where you can, you know, raise rates and lower rates to manage congestion. It's just the way that things are going to be done. If you look about how people are going to pay to use these roads, you know, all electronic road systems like the ICC where there are no toll booths and easy passes tacked on, I mean, that's really the wave of the future when you talk about roads that are happening and being built around the country and around the world.
Adam just made the important point that it's not just about financing the building of the roads. This is about managing the traffic as well. I think we'll get to a point where we start to talk about doing that in existing lanes, not just new lanes.
Valid point. Well, we'll take a break and come back with more from our traffic experts with Robert Thompson, the Gridlock, Dr. Gridlock from the Washington Post, Bob Marburg, and our own sprawl and crawl reporter, Adam Tuss. The number to get on the program, 877-336-1035.
Washington's most dependable source for news, traffic, and weather. 103.5 FM, WTOP Radio.
It's a special hour devoted to traffic and transportation issues in our region. Ask the traffic experts on WTOP Radio. Veteran traffic reporter Bob Marburg is with us. WTOP sprawl and crawl reporter Adam Tuss. And Dr. Gridlock from the Washington Post, Robert Thompson. Taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Let's go to the phones right now. Don is holding on from Stafford. Don, go ahead.
Yeah, why is it on so many main routes the traffic lights are timed to where most of them turn red? By the time you get up to speed and get to the next light, it turns red, and even at the intersections where there aren't anybody coming out of.
There are a number of engineering and technical explanations that may, at any given intersection, play into it. You know, there was a time when in the morning everybody went in one direction, everybody went home in the other direction. It was really easy to time and to sequence the traffic signals. But now there is so much of a distributed flow in all directions, including the demand to make left turns and right turns. And it's very difficult for the highway engineers to find enough green time to satisfy all of what they would call the movements of traffic, even by doing double turning lanes. The other issue is that some signals are indeed synchronized for a specific speed if you can maintain that. But once you get stopped, if you don't come up to speed and maintain that, there are places where the system just breaks down. We're lucky in some cases if you can get through a signal on the first couple of cycles. But there is also the dilemma that if they make the cycle too long and too generous in any one movement, then people are going to see the red ahead, and frankly, they're just going to make every attempt to blow through the light. As to whether or not the side streets get green, well, it depends on the technology that's being used in order to measure the demand, whether people are actually there and waiting.
But how can you draw attention to traffic leaders in the area to the light signal issue, the timing issue? Because if you're in downtown Washington, rush hour, particularly in the evening, you're lucky in some intersections if a couple of cars will get through at each cycle and you're looking ahead and the light down the road is still red, so no one in front of you is moving either.
It's such a dilemma because you can't simply synchronize signals in all four conceivable directions. That's just something that the engineers, without levitation, the engineers haven't figured out how to get past that.
Don't forget, a lot of it has to do with what your fellow drivers on the road are doing as well. You know, blocking the box, those kind of things. That all plays into getting through an intersection.
And it's not just drivers. It's also pedestrians hitting the call buttons to get the signal green in their direction.
Right.
Back to the phones. We have Mike calling in from Rockville. Mike, you're on WTOP. Go ahead.
I had a question. I want to go back to the hot lanes. I don't understand how when on 270 on the HOV lane, if you get in it after 6:30, you're moving maybe 3 or 4 miles an hour faster than the rest of the lanes. And when people have the opportunity to pay, how I don't understand how that's possibly going to move traffic any better or encourage people to put more people in a vehicle, when all they have to do is pay some money and eventually all those lanes will be moving at the same speed as all the other lanes.
Well, it could be very expensive to use those lanes depending on the degree of congestion. The price isn't just an issue of letting the company Transurban get its money back for building the new lanes. It's also going to be a question of raising the toll as the lanes get more congested. It's a basic issue of supply and demand. The more demand there is, the higher the toll is going to be. And supposedly that will bring down the level of congestion as drivers make this instantaneous calculation that they're about how much their time is worth.
Yeah. Like I said before, the proof will be in the pudding. Once the lanes open, we'll see if it has any market impact. The one thing I will say is that, you know, hot lanes are not new to this country. They're in places, and they have proven successful in other places. There are some places where they have, frankly, backfired. If you look at a road in Atlanta that just opened a hot lane system, where they raised the HOV requirement to get into the, you know, to ride for free, it really had a dramatic backfiring on what happened there. So a lot of studying. Actually, Bob, Doctor, I think you sat down with the hot lane people recently. I did as well. And believe me, they are trying to figure out every potential possibility of what could go wrong. And they're trying to make sure that, that those lanes move because they have a real incentive to, because they want to increase their profit.
I think that's the thing I like best, Adam, the fact that the profit motive is behind this.
Yeah, there's a real incentive to keep those lanes moving. As to why anyone would want to use them, well, let's say you're running late for something. I mean, and you see that the toll is $5 and you have $5 in your pocket. Are you willing to part with that if you know? And that's the thing about it. It's the predictability. If you know that you're going to be able to get home and shave 20 minutes off of your commute, I personally think people will, you know, will use those lanes, and we'll see how it works out in the end.
For the people who travel on business, to keep an appointment, you're going to build that into the cost of delivering the service, and whether it be delivering the computer repairs or the heating system or just getting a delivery done on time. So there will be the opportunity to simply include that as a cost of doing business.
What's more costly, sitting in congestion or paying the toll?
Depends.
Right.
Eric wants to weigh in on this discussion right now. Eric, go ahead. You're on WTOP.
Good morning, gentlemen. I'd like to thank you all for the work you do on behalf of us beleaguered drivers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Eric.
I kind of have the same question as the other caller. I'm not convinced that market forces are always the way to solve problems. And, you know, the people have reasons why they have to do things where they may not have a choice. And especially when it comes to a last-minute decision like, oh, look what the total is, I better change my mind. Sometimes you just can't do that. So I guess it'll be interesting to see what happens. I also wanted to mention, for those of you that are triggered with parking issues, there's a new blog up. It's called fixdcparking.com, and people might want to check that out. Thank you.
You know, since you mentioned parking, that's another dilemma, because the parking restrictions in the District of Columbia are really outdated by probably about 20 or 30 years. The rush hours in no way correspond to the times during which parking is restricted on the major arteries. The other element of that, also the fact that so many people are having goods delivered by so many different shippers, it's no longer a matter of one truck pulling up to the loading dock at Woodward and Lothrop. Yes, one time I worked for Woodward and Lothrop, but the reality of it
is that you have people, that
was a store that you actually walked into.
I see.
We're going to ask you to hold that thought, Bob, because we've got to pause for traffic and weather together on the 8th. And when we come back, we'll tell you more about how WTOP is helping you to make traffic decisions instantaneously. A discussion of traffic and transportation issues, not just on the 8s, but for a full hour this morning. It's a special Ask the Traffic Experts on WTOP. In the studio with us, WTOP's veteran traffic reporter, Bob Marburg, our sprawl and crawl reporter, Adam Tuss. And from the Washington Post, yes, it's Dr. Gridlock, Robert Thompson, taking your phone calls at 877-336-1035. You can also send emails at WTOP.com. You can send questions via Facebook, and also send us a tweet using the hashtag WTOPAskThe. Bob, longtime WTOP listeners know when there is breaking news, we'll break in. They'll hear the breaking news sounder or this just in to alert that there's some important information, late developments that are coming their way. And now we are adding that option to our traffic office as well. So you don't have to wait for the 8s any longer on WTOP. We'll bring it right to you.
Well, Mark, you just made a very good point, because we heard Jack Taylor's rather comprehensive update about 2 minutes ago, but you never know when stuff happens. We know that stuff happens. Sometimes bad stuff happens. And as soon as we can figure out where it is, people are coming up to a decision point at any given second. We do want to help you make the right decision. Just tell me left or right. And so, Mark, everyone stand by. This is only a test.
This is a Can't Wait alert from the WTOP Traffic Center.
And that will immediately be followed by some important information, usually from Bob or one of the other traffic reporters.
Stay tuned, because we don't know what's going to happen next, but we can be pretty sure that something will.
Absolutely. Let's go back to the phones now as we are waiting to hear from Steve in Silver Spring. Steve, go ahead. You're on WTOP.
Yes, I'm calling about bus rapid transit in Montgomery County. There's already Metrobus and ride-on system in Montgomery County, and no one can accuse it of being rapid. I was just wondering why not make that more rapid rather than including something else on 270. Right now, the bus system in a lot of cases goes only once every half an hour, and that's not exactly rapid.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, a lot of localities are looking at BRT as a way to get people moving, a low-cost way to increase transit in the area. The problem is, as you say, how do you get those buses moving when they're sitting in the same traffic as everybody else? And one of the ways you do that is expanding the existing infrastructure that you have in a way of maybe using shoulders, maybe allowing those buses to pass through signalized intersections on their own, using their own kind of signals and devices. I know that Montgomery County is trying to look at an extensive bus rapid transit system. Probably the most high profile one. Well, first of all, the Purple Line, there was a long debate about whether that should be light rail or bus rapid transit. And a lot of people still continue on that debate, even though it's going to be a light rail system. But the Corridor Cities Transitway, which will run along the 270 corridor, is being looked at as a possible bus rapid transit system, where the buses would have their own dedicated lanes, have their own stops. In essence, it would be a rail system on wheels, and that has proven successful in other places as well. So they are looking at that. It's a much more low-cost option compared to any sort of light rail or heavy rail, and it can be set up faster. And a lot of people in the industry are talking about BRT as a potential solution, even on 66.
Relatively low-cost, Adam, but still not
exactly
cheap by any means, and still probably years away, even though it does seem to be the transit system that is the easiest to build. One of the issues region-wide is that when you consider a bus rapid transit system, you're talking about, in many cases, one agency controlling the transit vehicles and another agency or agencies controlling the roads that those vehicles will run on. So it's not just a money issue. It's also an issue of getting all the jurisdictions and the agencies together.
And we have a psychological issue, too, because people wait for Metro Rail and they expect to get on something that moves very, very quickly. But right now, we don't get on a bus in general with the expectation that it's going to move quickly. So that will take a little bit of both, as the caller suggests, rapid that is transit that is rapid, but by the same token, a bit of a rethinking of what mode is going to get you there. There's one other issue, and that is if you have a system that consists of a number of different modes, every time you ask people to transfer, except at somewhere like Metro Center where you just ride one escalator, you begin to lose riders,
right,
and you add time to people's commute. So that's one of the downsides, all of which we try to strike the balance.
You know, one transportation expert in the region that I talked to pretty extensively always said, you won't get people to go onto a bus unless they're sitting in traffic and that bus passes them and they can see that bus is moving faster.
The best advertising in the world.
Absolutely.
We'll get to more of your phone calls and more of your Twitter questions as well for our panel of traffic experts on WTOP's
News, Traffic and Weather on Demand. This is 103.5 FM, WTOP Radio.
The topic is traffic for a full hour on WTOP Radio with our special panel, Ask the Traffic Experts on WTOP. Our reporter Bob Marburg is with us, Sprawl and Crawl reporter Adam Tuss, and Dr. Gridlock from the Washington Post, Robert Thompson. The number to call in if you want to join the discussion is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. We're going to the phones right now. Tom has been holding for a while from Clifton. Tom, go ahead. You're on WTOP. Tom, if you're there, go ahead. You're on the air. Sounds like we may have lost Tom. He was asking, and maybe, Bob, you can jump in to give us some perspective to answer his question. He wanted to know why there is not a unified traffic reporting authority here, such as they have in New York City.
I'm not sure the structure in New York City, but with all of the jurisdictions that we have, it's a very fascinating place where you've got two states plus the District of Columbia plus all of the counties. You have overlapping, adjacent, and concurrent jurisdictions. And when we've had governors, Governor O'Malley, Governor Kane, Governor McDonnell have all been in our traffic center, I point to the map, 50-mile radius map, and I say, governors, our listeners, your customers, your constituents don't see those jurisdictional boundaries. Mm-hmm. They only see where they live, where they need to go, where they need to be. And what we need is a sense that we're all in this together as a region. And the only way we're ever going to get out of it is regional cooperation between the jurisdictions and the agencies. And I might add, between those of us who use the various systems, including the roads.
We've never seen that issue come into play around here about jurisdictional boundaries. I mean, just look at what happens during snowstorms. You know, I say that facetiously, obviously. You know, during snowstorms or any sort of emergency evacuation, this is what it's all about. It's all about who's calling the shots and not stepping on one another's toes. And ultimately, does the federal government Bigfoot everybody else and make the final decision? What the Council of Governments and places like that are trying to do right now is trying to figure out a way of who is the person to be in charge or what structure we should have when any sort of major emergency or evacuation takes place.
I'm not sure that it necessarily takes one person overall, but it certainly takes a willingness to cooperate. In 1987, we had the Veterans Day snowstorms. Road crews were geared up for collecting leaves. We had thunder snows. Doug Hill talks about the phenomenon where it was a thunderstorm that produced up to a foot of snow in less than an hour down in Oxon Hill. The entire region came to a stop. This was before cell phones. Early in the morning, we began to realize there were people who were on the Beltway all night. But here is the point. There was a time then when the Maryland troopers and the highway department would stop at the Maryland end of the Wilson Bridge and the American Legion Bridge. The Virginia State Police and VDOT would stop at their end, and nobody would go across. The breakthrough came the day after the Veterans Day snowstorm. I was down in Alexandria. The Virginia State Police commander over in Braddock Road, Herb Northern, was up in the helicopter, and he said, when you get our guys, our side of the bridge cleaned up, you go over into Maryland and help them. Mm. And then with the microphone still keyed, he said, if anybody goes to jail over this, it'll be me. That's okay. I retire in January. And I've used his model as an example. And since that time, all of the agencies overlap the jurisdictional lines, so you have four or six agencies instead of none. And that has made a huge difference. But that's the kind of spirit that we need regionally, and that's the kind of spirit that we need as individuals as well.
When snowstorms are coming, all the region's agencies, more than 100 folks, get onto a conference call at 3 a.m. and try to figure out what to do, what the federal workers should do, what the highway departments should do, what the schools should do. It's not just one grand decision. It's the weather conditions may vary. You may have rain down in southern Maryland. You may have freezing rain up in Frederick. So it's actually very complicated, not just a question of jurisdictional boundaries, but also the actual experience that we're in for.
Let's go to an email question from Tim in Upper Marlboro, who writes in that since the new 11th Street Bridge opened, he says there are a series of traffic accidents multiple times in the evening rush hour because you are dumped onto the left lane of southbound 295, he says, and drivers are trying to cross over to get onto the Suitland Parkway or get to the BW Parkway. Many accidents. What's happening over there, and when will this problem be fixed?
Mark, we've gone through one phase of the construction project, and it's a major engineering challenge to build a new road and keep it open at the same time. The engineers refer to it as the maintenance of traffic, and in some cases, it doesn't go all that smoothly. But there is light at the end of the tunnel, or at the end of the bridge, as it were.
Well, I think what the caller is referring to is a flyover ramp on 295 rather than to the new 11th Street Bridge span. One of the spans is scheduled to open this weekend, and then another is scheduled to open next week. Those are the two new throughway spans, which we're really looking forward to because ultimately they'll have links to the interstates, eliminating some missing links that have been a problem for drivers for decades. But there's progress still to come. And the new bridges will open over the next week. Then later on, the new ramps will open. That'll be the real breakthrough. Then about a year after that, I believe, a third span will open. That's the neighborhood-to-neighborhood connection.
Right, which also down the line is expected to have some sort of streetcar running across it. And so, you know, you get a better local connection there. And don't forget that that project is the biggest and largest, most expensive project that the District of Columbia has underway right now. It's a big project.
Adam, it was also a breakthrough when they briefed us on what that project was going to consist of, because it was really the first time the District of Columbia acknowledged the fact that there are commuters who travel through the District of Columbia order to get back and forth between work and home between Maryland and Virginia. Up until now, they try to make it as difficult as possible, but people would find their ways around, and usually it's a matter of going through the neighborhood. So if you provide people a pathway that moves, you actually have a chance to benefit the neighborhood and the inevitable commute passing through.
Kind of a no-brainer that those connections weren't there in the first place. But I asked somebody about that, and they said, well, you know, back in the day, you built what you had the money to do. So now they're going back and trying to correct that problem. So once that project is put in place and fixed, it should be a much smoother ride.
Now, get traffic updates on Twitter at WTOP Traffic.
You like me right now. You like me.
Like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/WTOP News.
We're talking traffic and transportation in the area with our panel of traffic experts, WTOP Sprawl and Crawl reporter Adam Tuss, our veteran traffic reporter Bob Marburg is with us, and Dr. Gridlock from the Washington Post is here, Robert Thompson. Taking your phone calls, 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. You can send us a message, a tweet on Twitter. Use the hashtag WTOPAskThe. Gentlemen, I want to get to the issue of red light cameras and speed cameras, but before we do, Adam, you have another thought on clearing snow and all the problems
yes,
with
that. Yes, I'm the designated Twitterer in this studio, so I'm monitoring for us. And Don writes, we were talking about snowstorms. He says, regardless of who releases in snowstorms, you know, tells people to go, people will release themselves. That's a good point, Bob.
Adam, you know, the mayor came out yesterday and they showed the hardware and so on, and they talked about the option of sheltering in place. Well, we're not advocating that you take 3 days to stay under your office desk in a snowstorm. However, what we all need to remember is you can't – well, they've tried some efforts at pre-treating the roads, but for the most part, you don't start spreading the salt until the snow starts to fall and begins to stick on the road. So what we really need to do is to give the men and women driving the salt spreaders and the snow plows about a 90-minute head start to at least complete one pass on the route that they've been designated to cover in order that we don't wind up with a half inch of snow becoming an eighth inch of glaze.
Very good point.
Many of us remember January 26th when the weather forecast was spot on. But people looked out their window and saw that there was no snow falling. It arrived exactly on schedule at 4 o'clock, and everyone got stuck in the afternoon rush hour. It was Mother Nature versus human nature.
It was so true because the forecasts, the radar and the forecasts are so much more accurate. Robert, you talked about you may see rain in southern Maryland. You may see a foot of snow or freezing rain out in the Shenandoah. So it can vary across the scope of our region. But by the same token, the inevitability of the weather is now really something that you can count on. Frankly, I never expected that weather would move that fast. I mean, it was like a summer thunderstorm. We heard from people in Culpeper and in Orange, Virginia, and they said, my God, I drove through a curtain and I was looking at a carpet of sleet. And at that point, I realized, I think we're going to have a problem.
Let's talk about red light cameras, speed cameras in the district and elsewhere. Have you noticed that that they are accomplishing at least the stated purpose, that people are obeying the traffic laws more often, or are you simply getting more phone calls and emails complaining about the high cost of these items?
They do tend to create compliance in the immediate vicinity of the cameras.
I think you have to look no further than Connecticut Avenue and Chevy Chase to see everybody knows that they're there. They slow down, but you're right. Once they're past the cameras, they speed up a little bit. You know, when you talk about red light cameras or speed cameras, I always point back to the former police chief, Chuck Ramsey, who here said, look, if you don't want a speeding ticket, don't speed. If you don't want to get a ticket for running through red light, don't run the red light. So regardless of how you feel about them, that's just the basics about it. If you're speeding, by the way, you usually get about a 11 or 12 mile per hour buffer or cushion. Don't speed and you won't get a ticket. Don't run a red light. You won't get a ticket.
There is the concern and the respect for people's neighborhoods. and for school zones and places where it's just inappropriate to try to drive highway speeds on roads and streets that are simply not intended and populated by bikes and pedestrians and other potential hazards. You know, in the District of Columbia, by statute, the speed limit is 25 miles an hour unless posted otherwise. And in some cases, it may be 30, 40, or 50. By the way, you talked about Chevy Chase, where people have come to recognize the little cameras mounted by the side of the road. The district has now deployed new speed cameras, which we've dubbed R2D2.1 speed cameras here in D.C. And we did take a picture of one. You will find it on the website, just so you know what
to
look for.
It's a funny-looking thing.
Because I can assure you it is already looking for you. They have posted yellow signs by the speed limit signs. It does say photo enforced, so they are giving you a warning. And in this case, it probably pays to take heed.
I'm sorry, Robert. Go ahead.
Well, I find that people have no problem with the speed limit. They have a problem with enforcement of the speed limit. I see that in the letters I'm getting about the intercounty connector, where the speed limit is 55. People routinely ignore the 55 speed limit unless they see a police car. They complain there are too many police cars on the intercounty connector now.
Jim from Fairfax has been holding on to speak with you. Jim, go ahead. You're on WTOP.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. This has to do with the Brack building at Seminary Road and 395. A week or so ago, the Washington Post had an article where, as expected, all of the local politicians were throwing their hands in the air and saying that this was not a good idea to put it there. It shouldn't be open. It's going to cause traffic problems. My question is this, is that as I remember about 4 or 5 years ago when they selected this site, didn't they have an alternate site at the GSA warehouse site down by Springfield Mall? And the second question is where were all these politicians 4 or 5 years ago complaining before they built it?
Well, you're absolutely right. They did have that site selected, and it looked like that was going to be the site. There was a lot of movement to put the what is now the Mark Center building at the Franconia, right next to the Franconia Springfield VRE station, right next to the Franconia Springfield Metro station. There was a lot of transit-oriented development that was associated with that, and then it got pulled away, and the city of Alexandria was willing to welcome the jobs that it would bring to the site it's on now. Of course, you know, that Seminary Road interchange right now doesn't function so well as it is. You throw 6,000 people into the mix, it's going to get worse.
One issue about all the BRAC decisions was that the feds just didn't give the locals enough time to plan for the traffic improvements that were going to be needed. The whole planning and funding process and construction takes about 10 years. There was nowhere near that much time available.
Right. And, you know, when you talk about that, the federal government kind of realizing that, oh my gosh, there are traffic impacts. And nowhere in the country are there more BRAC moves that are affecting any city than ours. But it seems in some levels, at least, the federal government, the Department of Defense, is realizing that, okay, we need to help and fund some of these issues, specifically around Bethesda Naval. You're seeing some improvements going there.
Bob Marburg, the final seconds are yours.
Only that we are paying for all of the improvements and all of the inconveniences. We are paying for it with time out of our lives. And there is no way on, there is nowhere on the income tax form where you can take the time lost as a deduction. There is no rebate forthcoming. We are being taxed in terms of time.
Ask the traffic experts on WTOP. Gentlemen, thank you all for joining us.